Dankeschön, Herr Landesrat. Wir wollen eine Tür öffnen, haben Sie gesagt. Das könnte sozusagen als Motto über diesen Tag auch stehen. Den Tagesablauf, den sehr umfangreichen Tagesablauf, haben Sie in den Unterlagen vor sich. Sie haben in diesen Unterlagen auch jeweils ausführliche Biografien über die Damen und Herren, die hier als Referenten bei uns sind. Wir haben uns sehr viel vorgenommen für diesen Tag. Und das bedeutet, dass auch Sie, meine Damen und Herren, als Referentinnen und Referenten gefordert sind, in spezieller Weise, ich spreche jetzt die Zeit an. Wenn wir das bis 18 Uhr schaffen sollen, dann müssen wir uns daran halten und deshalb auch an dieser Stelle mein Appell an Sie, sprechen Sie über alles, was Sie vorbereitet haben, aber bitte sprechen Sie nicht über 10 Minuten, sprechen Sie also nicht länger als 10 Minuten lang. Ich werde dann im Sinne einer hoffentlich dann möglichen Diskussion nach 10 Minuten abbrechen. Meine Damen und Herren, noch ein organisatorischer Hinweis. Sie haben gesehen, draußen gibt es ein Buffet. Wenn Sie während der Konferenz Lust auf Kaffee oder ein Brötchen haben, bitte bedienen Sie sich, gehen Sie einfach nach draußen. Soweit der organisatorische Teil und die Einleitung. Kommen wir jetzt zum Plenum 1, das den Titel trägt Geopolitische Aspekte. Jeder, der die Schwarzmeerregion kennt, und das sind wohl die allermeisten von uns, der weiß um die Schönheiten dieser Region, aber auch um die Herausforderung, die sich in diesen Ländern bieten. Eine komplexe und eine aufgesplitterte geopolitische Region. Aus Sicht der Europäischen Union gibt es vielfältige Kontakte in die Schwarzmeerregion, Kooperationen auch in Forschung und Innovation, und die Ausweitung von Forschung und Innovation ist jetzt Thema des ersten Referats, des Referats von Gediminas Ramanauskas. Er kommt von der Europäischen Kommission, genauer gesagt von der Generaldirektion Forschung und Innovation, Europäische Nachbarschaft. Ich darf Sie als erstes um Ihr Referat bitten.
Dear Minister, dear distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great honor for me to come to this important event and represent my Directorate General on Research and Innovation. In this Directorate of European Commission, in this Directorate, I work on international cooperation. We have three units with different geographical regional responsibilities. The directorate itself is called, for international cooperation, is called D, and we have unit D1, which specializes in enlargement countries, Russia, Asia, and Pacific, D2, which specializes in Americas, and D3, which I represent. This unit specializes and covers Eastern Partnership countries, Gulf countries, and Africa, including Southern neighborhood. And I am policy officer for Eastern Partnership and Black Sea. In addition to policy files, we also work with projects. So, for instance, as I cover Eastern Partnership and Black Sea, the INCO projects, which fall into geographical domain of my responsibility, are also my responsibility. So we also attend kickoff meetings, final meetings, and manage those projects, scientific part of the projects. We also have Unit D4, which deals with administrative issues. So they have financial experts, legal experts, who are in charge of these aspects of project management. Today, I would like to make you a short presentation on the most recent document that our directorate proposed. It's a communication on international cooperation strategy. It was recently adopted. And it is not a long document. It's just 11 pages. And this document is accompanied by a staff working paper, which is 40 pages long. In this document, there is an important chapter on regions and countries. And an implication is that from now on, European Commission would seek to concentrate more on specificities of each region. We will be collecting information on each region and identifying opportunities for cooperation, identifying opportunities which would be based on the hard data, on numbers, on real advices of the people who are working in those regions. So, and in addition to this, I would like to remind you that countries of Eastern Partnership and also Danube region are eligible for applying to some INCO calls, which were announced in July, and deadline is in December 18th. So INCO projects deal chiefly with establishing of platforms for cooperation, for dialogue, for capacity building. So INCO 2013-1, which is INCONET, is a call for proposals, and both Danube region countries and Eastern Partnership countries are eligible. We also have an interesting call which is called Research to Innovation, and in and for this call for proposals, which is INCO 2039, Research to Innovation, Eastern Partnership countries are eligible. So deadline is December 18th, so it's not too late to take some action. And of course, official information on those calls, as usual, is in official journal of the European Union. So in my presentation, I will briefly remind you of the main aspects of Horizon 2020 and how research and innovation fits into Horizon 2020. Then I will briefly explain why this communication, which was on international cooperation, on the strategic approach in international cooperation, was needed and what specifically is proposed. So, of course, the main document providing us with a vision for development of European Union is Horizon 2020. And Horizon 2020 is, first of all, about jobs and smart, sustainable, and inclusive growth. In order to achieve growth in jobs and smart, sustainable, and inclusive growth, we believe that investments in research and innovation are very important. That's why, as a constituent part of Horizon 2020, there is a headline target, achieving investing 3% of GDP into research and innovation by 2020. So basically, that's the vision. That's where are we heading it. And we believe that there is a lot of potential there, especially if we focus on innovation. Now, in order to get there, Innovation Union Flagship Initiative was adopted. And this initiative comprises lots of suggestions on what actions should be taken in order to get us there. And to implement this flagship initiative, we have two pillars. One pillar at a framework is a political pillar. It is about the framework conditions for getting us to that vision. And Horizon 2020, and currently still FP7, Framework Program Number 7, is a financial pillar. This is where we give resources to really lead us to our vision. So where is Horizon 2020 now? Horizon 2020 as a document was adopted at the end of last year, and it proposes $80 billion for research and innovation in the period between 2014 and 20. Currently, it's still at the stage of proposal of the Commission. And of course, deliberations are held in Council and in the Parliament. So we expect that the final decision, final approval on Horizon 2020 will be made in the middle of 2013. And the first calls of Horizon 2020 will be announced in the beginning of 2014. Priorities. How Horizon 2020 is different from the FP7 is as follows. Excellence in science is emphasized. We believe that Europe should do more there. Industrial leadership is, of course, it's a very important aspect. We believe that science and research should be closer to implementation, to real products that improve our competitiveness. So we want to really close this gap between research entities and industry, and importantly, societal challenges. FP7 as a program was built so that it was divided into four big parts. First one was cooperation. And in this cooperation part, there were specific thematic areas. So the whole program was quite segmented. So thematic areas, for instance, nanosciences, health, then marine sciences, etc. So second part was people, then innovation, then ideas, and eventually capacities. So international cooperation part falls under capacities part. Now, instead of having a segmented program, which is what FP7 was like, we believe that we should concentrate on societal challenges. Now, what are the implications? Implications are as follows. Researchers and scientists will not work in isolation of their scientific specialization. European Commission would like to promote cross-cutting teams of scientists coming from variety of areas and covering variety of fields. And even in the last call for proposals in FP7, as one of the eligibility criteria, societal challenges, addressing certain societal challenges was indicated. So we believe that this last call of FP7 should bridge the gap between FP7 and Horizon 2020. So for instance, in order to be eligible for funding in R2I, call for proposals, R2I stands for Research to Innovation Call for Proposals, applicants should address one societal challenge. And of course, it's up to applicants to choose which one. So why this communication was important? Now, if we look to the world, changes in the world, we see that the world is moving from a triad to a multipolar. What does it mean? It means that while recently most of the research and science was done in either the USA, European Union, or Japan, now it is not the case. Science, technology, and innovation is also increasingly internationally interconnected, and most challenges are, of course, global in nature. The graph represents the dynamics of the changes that are taking place. And a comparison is made between the year 2000 and 2007 or 8. At the top of the graph, you see the number of researchers. And here, Europe, which is represented by the blue part, performs quite stable. The number of researchers as a total share of the world researchers is has declined somewhat, but is quite stable. Now, part of GDP spent on research and development is also has also declined somewhat. We also see a slight decline in the number of the high impact publications as a share of all publications. It doesn't mean that the number declined in absolute numbers, but in relative numbers, our share is declining. And the same is true for patent applications. They declined also probably the most substantially. But in comparison with the US, which is represented by the red color, this decline was not so seriously pronounced. And the yellow area, which represents Asian countries, shows that these countries, high growth economies there, are really taking the ground. What are we doing to respond to this situation? First of all, we have a possibility for various countries to associate themselves with FP7, and by associating with FP7, country takes responsibilities and receives the possibilities which are just like those of the member states of EU. So currently in FP7 we had 14 associated countries, and they are listed here, and you see that some of those countries are from the so-called Black Sea region. And we also have science and technology agreements with 20 countries. By the way, regarding association agreements, the fact that country is associated with FP7 does not give the country an automatic association with Horizon 2020. So for Horizon 2020, the process will be started anew. So countries should assess their performance in FP7 and decide whether they want association with Horizon 2020 or not. Science and technologies agreements with 20 countries. With some countries, these agreements have no end date. This is especially applicable for so-called southern neighborhood countries. For instance, there is no end date for either Egypt or Morocco. So with these countries, these agreements are kind of permanent. And here again, as far as the region in question is concerned, we have Russia and Ukraine, which have science and technology agreements. And implications of science and technology agreements are important because each year we have meetings with representatives of those countries, normally interchangeably, one meeting in Brussels and other one elsewhere in the partner country. And in those meetings, we discuss the most important issues, starting from harmonization of research priorities and finishing with IPR or access to the programs of our partner countries for European scholars. And of course, we also have other agreements, partnership and cooperation agreements, association and cooperation agreements, other regional agreements, and of course, we also try to address various concerns there. If we summarize drivers of international cooperation, so why EU needs to cooperate, we see that among those drivers are seeking excellence and attractiveness in research and innovation for EU as a whole, accessing knowledge produced outside Europe. We need to gain access to new markets, strengthen competitiveness, and of course, global challenges can be addressed only working together with other countries because the challenges don't know borders, don't stop at national borders. And of course, research and development, and research and innovation is also used to extend our external policies, to complement them. So what is proposed? First of all, Horizon 2020 is going to remain open to participation for countries and regions across the globe, as it was the case with FP7. But not all third country participants will be automatically eligible for funding. Whereas now, the key criteria in assessing whether a country is eligible for funding was GDP per capita. It's going to change. European Commission suggests that we should look to absolute GDP as a criteria, because we believe that countries with big absolute GDP already accumulated a kind of critical mass which allows them to choose priorities properly. And among those priorities could be research and innovation. And another important aspect that we're going to emphasize from now on, we also believe that our scholars, our researchers should have access to third countries programs. And if we see that there is some kind of discrimination, of course, we will respond appropriately. And areas for international cooperation will be identified on the following basis. We will look to the capacity of partners. We will assess existing new or emerging market, how it will impact our competitiveness, how it will relate to international commitments, and are there legal and administrative frameworks in place? So we suggest actually dual approach, openness plus targeted actions. And for targeting actions, we suggest distributing all or dividing all the countries to three groups. And this division is as follows. In the first group, there are EFTA countries, enlargement countries, and countries covered by European neighborhood policy. These countries will benefit from really a special attention of EU, because European neighborhood, EFTA, EU enlargement countries, of course, are the most important for EU, because we see them in many respects as an extension of our European research area. And of course, what's going there is of very direct and has very direct impact on EU, industrialized countries, and emerging economies. Now, for EFTA enlargement and neighborhood countries, and we are going to focus on integration and alignment of them with ERA, and they will have possibility to associate themselves with Horizon 2020. Of course, before doing so, they will need to carefully assess their capabilities, because as you know, association is not coming free of charge. For association to be possible, countries need to pay annual fees. And of course, they, in order to really benefit from this kind of association, research community should be very active. They should participate in a number of projects, so that number of grants is really at the level that makes those annual payments useful, relevant. And we also believe that the most important thing is that this area, especially European neighborhood area, is a common knowledge and innovation space. This is something that we promised at political level. We believe that European neighborhood is our extension of ERA.
So thank you, Mr. Lemanauskas. Thank you very much. I think we should have a break at this time. Danke vielmals. Es war ein etwas längerer Einführungsvortrag, aber ich habe gehört, der Ramanauskas hat auch nicht die Übersetzung davon gehört, wie ich gesagt habe. 10 Minuten sind es. Vorerst einmal herzlichen Dank.
Okay.
Very much. Thank you very much.